So welcome to Topical Talks with Title Research. This is the podcast where we talk to legal professionals about their areas of expertise. My name is Andrea Pierce. Today, I'm joined by Ian Bond, and Ian is shortly going to start a new role at Thursfields as the head of wills and estates. Ian was the chair of the Law Society's Wills and Equity Committee up until a few days ago, and although Ian will remain on the committee, and I'm sure we're going to have an interesting discussion ahead of us today. So Ian, you're very welcome to this podcast, so thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So I just thought we would start just about asking you a little bit about your background, and you know, you've been in the industry now for a little bit of time. I won't embarrass you with how long, but do you want to explain a bit to the listeners about your background?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Yes, I've always been a private client solicitor and proud STEP member. I trained at a lovely firm down in Sussex before moving to the, bright lights of London, and a firm that's now sort of emerged as Simpson Miller. So a nice big firm there. I suppose primarily the thing that sort of I'm probably going to be most known for will always sort of stick with me is my time at Co-op Legal Services, right at the outset of what was Tesco's Law, setting up the wills and probate offerings there. But I've also had in my time privilege of working at firms like Mitchell Moores down in Exeter, who are the, or at the time were winners of the STEP Law Firm of the Year award, and also worked at other firms like Higgs and Sons, excellent firms in private client. But as you said, exciting times now as I sort of move on to become head of department for Thursfields in the West Midlands.
You just mentioned something that I completely forgot about, Tesco Law, and that term that everyone was a little bit scared of how many years ago. And
that's probably a good sort of dozen years ago now that it was sort of coming into the market, and it, you know, a term that's long forgotten and seems a little bit old hat now, I suppose.
Funny hearing it. So your term has just ended for the as chair of the Wills and Equity Committee, so congratulations on the last 3 years, and I think it would be really interesting actually to hear about your time as chair and what you feel were the committee's biggest achievements during your term.
Well, the Wills and Equity Committee is the voice of private client solicitors on legislative and policy matters for wills, trust, probate, powers of attorney, charity matters on behalf of the Law Society. And I suppose, like for all of the legal industry for the last couple of years, it's been a very busy time. Private client practitioners haven't been spared those changes. Yeah, so over my 3 years, we've had, you know, the changes for HMCTS probate service, the introduction of their new design grants of representation, the introduction of the online digital application process, the ending of the use of oaths, and introducing the statements of truth, and then the introduction of those wonderful standard application forms. So lots of things going on there. We also had the threats of new fees that were coming in. But you know, setting aside from the probate side of matters, and there was also lots of changes for the registration of trusts with HM Revenue and Customs. We had a quick update and change to the rules of intestacy with some updating of the figure work on those. And for solicitors, we had new standards and regulations introduced from the SRA, and we all needed to get used to price transparency and putting our fees for probate and state administration services on our websites. And all of that was even before COVID-19 struck.
Yeah, so plenty to keep you busy.
Absolutely. Lots of things that we did do. Personal highlights was piloting the online digital application process for the grants of probate. It was interesting to see the thought process of the MOJ and HMCTS on this. They originally went from being a sort of project which was digitization for digitization's sake. They were just focusing on automating a process of making grants of probate. And it's changed its focus, and recently there's some new people have come in to give it some emphasis and to refocus it, given some of the issues and problems that it had with the probate service. And they've actually now started to focus on what professional users really want to get out. Well, all users want to get out of the service, and that is, we just want a grant of probate, a grant of representation to be issued. We don't really care if it's digital or not. So they've gone from an automated process where it's just they want to capture data and input data to actually being a transformative process of looking at what the outcome is and trying to make sure that the project is looking forward to actually saying how can they work with professionals and with users to actually get a grant of probate issued in a quick and simple and straightforward way.
You're right, because, you know, very different, a different type of application for a layperson versus a professional. And do you think that professionals should be worried about having that uniform approach in place?
I think there's some elements of uniformity that is going to be helpful for us, just making sure we capture relevant data that is going to be on the face of every grant of representation in the correct way, in a standard way. But the whole process has to be looked at from what we're trying to achieve. And there's so many different types of grants of probate, and practitioners are used to sort of taking off the Tristram and Coote from the shelf and looking through the different precedents and the different application types. Any process, any standardization has to be able to cope with all of those varieties in all the different types of grants. So I'm not quite sure that we're there yet for everything, but I'm pretty sure now the new team that are looking after the process will get us there at some point in the future.
Oh, that's really, really great to hear. And I don't think we could, you know, avoid what's happened the last couple of months, well, you know, more than a couple of months actually with the pandemic. And has that, from your chairs, with your chair's hat on, how did it affect, you know, the outlook of the committee?
Well, the interesting thing about the coronavirus pandemic is it's seen positives, I think more positives than negatives, but it's forced us to look at the way that we provide our services to clients and evaluate how we can do things, perhaps do things better. And a lot of the processes and procedures that we had in place pre-COVID were all very much in place because that's the way it's always been done, with no thought as to why. And it's allowed us to actually sort of look at what we're actually doing in terms of being private client practitioners and see how we can do things better. One of the things that's come up was, of course, when it came to COVID-19 back in March, we were sort of facing the lockdown. So how can we carry on providing legal services to our clients throughout the lockdown? How can we ensure that that people have access to those legal services? And one of the first things that the Law Society were doing was campaigning to make sure that solicitors who wrote wills and that acted on behalf of vulnerable clients through either deputies or attorneys became key workers, so that they were able to still go out and continue to work and take instructions, because we saw a huge increase in demand for wills across the board, not just solicitors, will writers, online will providing services, and the packs that you buy from WH Smith, you know, all flying off the shelves because people suddenly faced with their own mortality. Yeah. And you know, COVID-19 saw a huge increase in demand for people to making wills for a first time or updating their existing wills. And we know that certainly the NHS trusts around us here in the Midlands were telling their frontline staff in the NHS to go and make their wills, to put their plans in place. Purely simply because it was part of sensible precautions for working in the NHS in a period of the pandemic. So huge amounts of demand. And I think solicitors and will writers have coped admirably by sort of thinking about what the law requires, you know, certainly with regards to signing of wills. And you know, we've had so many different stories of being wills signed on car bonnets and over garden walls and, you know, watching through patio windows. So taking a legal process, which is quite prescriptive in the formalities, and actually making sure that they can still deliver for clients. And that's, you know, has been good, and it's a mark of and testament to the solicitors and will writers that they have been, you know, getting out from behind their desks and thinking of ways to make sure that they can service their clients' needs. So clients get wills, you know, powers of attorney, they get the service they need. So hats off to everyone around the country for doing a great job on that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, there's lots of stories that I've heard, and you know, I think personally, I think it's a result that about, you know, the video witnessing. I'll talk to you about that in a second. And you know, long before that, you know, was passed, you know, again, I'd heard of lots of will writers and solicitors just thinking outside the box, and you know, ultimately, you want to do everything you can for your client, and you know, if that had to be done over Zoom or Teams, then so be it. And I, you know, sort of good on people for actually thinking like that.
Absolutely. And you know, I think we're all sort of used to Zoom, Teams, Skype, those sorts of facilities now to take the instructions, and you know, we can sort of see the benefits. So clients not having to come to the office, but we can also record the conversations that we have, so assisting with file notes, making sure that our files are better, and you know, it's the sword and the shield. So when you have these recordings, you can, you know, shield you from any potential claims, because you can show exactly what was said. And but it's also the fact of you know, sometimes it, you know, when you play them back, you actually think, well, actually I could do that better. So it's a source of learning as well. So you know, it has multiple benefits.
Yeah, as long as the client, you know, sweeps around the room with their video, so there's like nobody behind the sofa coercing them that you can't see. You just imagine.
Oh, it's always the worry, because the thing with the technology is absolutely fantastic, and there's a huge generation of silver surfers who have got themselves used to technology, but not everybody has, and it's there's an element of elderly and vulnerable clients who may not be technically savvy, and always with, you know, technology and elderly and vulnerable clients, there are a small minority of people who may seek to take advantage. So, as you said, trying to ensure, just like if they were in the office, you know, that the family member who's brought them along to the office stays outside and can't coerce them into saying things, you have to try and use that same element of common sense and saying, you know, making sure there's no one else in the room, giving them slips of paper saying, no, leave everything to me and exclude my brother's stroke, sister stroke, whoever it is that they want to you know, cause issue with.
And do you think it's a result about video witnessing?
Well, the thing that comes from this, and the driver of it, it's the government wanted to act, and they were getting letters to MPs, you know, the post bag for members of the House of Lords were all saying how potentially difficult people were finding it. Yes, they could, you know, contact solicitors and will writers, but not everybody wants to use a solicitor or a will writer. And they were finding the formalities you know, a little bit too much. So the government wanted to look at different ways of potentially easing matters. And you know, a lot of action was happening in New Zealand, in Canada, in Australia, other parts of the world, which, you know, take as its basis our Wills Act from 1837, and what they were doing to make it easier for people to make wills. So there was a genuine demand, and the government wanted to have a look at, you know, what could it do. The sad thing was we had the consultation in 2017, which was started by the Law Commission, but unfortunately it was paused. So it did have an interim report, which was an excellent basis of starting conversations. So with my Law Society hat on and with others from the Law Society, we had conversations with the MOJ about the different things that could be done. The whole driving premise for that was to actually say, well, yes, you can make changes, but they've got to be proportionate and reasonable. And they've also got to make sure that they're not going to have any form of undue influence and all the things that we just spoke about of saying, you know, a potential for elderly and vulnerable clients to be abused. So it was trying to come up with something that was going to be of benefit to a section of the community. But not take it too far, because the Law Commission is there and has an excellent role to play in actually making a proper, thorough investigation of all the options that are available to make a change in the future.
Yeah. It's I think it's really interesting, because I think that the pandemic has actually forced an awful lot of change in, you know, in an area of law that we probably don't see a huge amount of change, do we? But it kind of, it, you know, it's a bit like buses. It'll all happen, you know, in the same year. And I think that the legal sector is coped incredibly well with that change, because change, you know, to some people, they don't cope with it very well. But I think there's been an awful lot of positives that have come out of it, like you said, about looking at how businesses operate moving forward, and even something basic like paper files. You know, I've heard of an awful lot of, you know, firms that are still working with paper, and just thinking about how they can digitize the process themselves. And you know, I'm sure there are other negatives that have come out of it, but I think there are an incredible amount of positives too.
Yeah, I think one thing, as probate practitioners, we're getting used to having case management systems. We're getting used to the fact that, you know, if we're in larger firms, that other departments are all completely paper light, and they have all their incoming matters get post and everything scanned on, put onto a central system. So I know of a lot of firms that were paper light beforehand who have actually managed to do very well and continue working with everyone sat on their own sort of kitchen tables or back bedrooms or whatever it is, carrying on doing probate work. But I also know that there's several firms that, as you say, you know, the natural output of a probate solicitor is paper, and having to go into the office and come back with boxes full of files and paperwork to sort of sift through and, you know, try and carry on working at home, which has huge amounts of risk. So I think that drive alone for people to sort of be paper light in probate is, you know, is a really positive thing.
Yeah. And can you predict any other changes that may be on the agenda of the committee that, you know, you might not be able to disclose, but, you know, how do you see the industry changing in the next couple of years?
Well, I think the one thing that this temporary legislation is temporary legislation. It is backdated because to the start of the pandemic, purely simply because it's trying to enable people who did use, you know, an element of video witnessing to allow their wills to go through and forward. What it doesn't do, and it is quite limited, and it's not intended to be something that people will change their business model on to go all out for remote witnessing. It's to enable people who can't fulfill the current formalities to have an option. But it buys time for the Law Commission to come and do its work. And the Law Commission in 2017, you know, looked at things like electronic wills and e-signatures, and it set out, you know, at that time some preconditions that it felt would need to be met in order for you know, this sort of thing to come into the statute books on a permanent basis, you know, to look at the dangers of forgery and see, you know, the wider technology security and availability to the public. And those sorts of things will mean that the Law Commission are definitely going to be doing a report. They will definitely be doing a new wills bill, which will be, you know, for the next 100 plus years potentially. And some of the things that they will look at is definitely bringing in e-signatures and electronic wills. Can that be done? Putting out a proper remote virtual witnessing set of instructions so that you know, this can be on a more formal basis. It will also, you know, take a leaf out of the New Zealand, Canada, South Africa, Australia mold. And I can, you know, certainly say that, you know, dispensing powers, you know, similar to electronic wills, looking at wills in all its alternative formats, you know, that don't require the formal validity that we have at the moment of a piece of paper with a pen putting a signature on it in front of two witnesses. You know, can we go down the idea of, you know, text messages, video messages, all sorts of different things that have been allowed by saying to the judiciary, have a look, investigate the circumstances, and see if you can actually give effect to somebody's wishes. So if someone has sent a text message or recorded a video message on their phone without the rock-eyed witnesses, but if it's, you know, a judge thinks it's a genuine attempt to set out their last wishes, you know, can a judge actually say, well, I'll have the powers to deal with that? And other things that may come with that will be, you know, looking at capacity. So rather than having a minimum age limit for making a will of 18, will it be reduced to 16, or would they take that out completely and just say there is a capacity test for making a will, and you may have a mature 13-year-old who wants to make a will, and if they pass that capacity test, that's fine. So there's all sorts of things that the Law Commission can look at and, you know, will look at, and we'll have probably within the next 2 to 3 years, you know, a completely different arena for making wills with a lot more possibilities for, you know, clients to make wills in different ways. So that's going to be incredibly exciting to be looked at.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that, you know, I'm sure there's somebody already building the technology around e-signatures, and I also think that the output of that as well is confirmation that, you know, all three parties were present at the same time. I'm sure you've had many of wills over the years where on the face of it looks valid, and then you need to do an affidavit for whatever reason, and then the witnesses come forward and say, oh, actually we weren't all together. And, you know, you've then got an invalid will, whereas, you know, you can imagine technology actually mitigating against that.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I've had situations before where, you know, unfortunately I've had to be in hospital beds doing emergency wills for people who are about to pass away. And for a while now, I've had those recorded just on either on an iPad or a phone, that sort of thing, just recording those. And the technology is there and enabling us to sort of capture a lot more of what the client's wishes. We should sort of embrace that. We should also be mindful, and the Law Commission will be mindful of making sure that, you know, we have the safeguards to stop forgery and abuse of elderly and vulnerable clients. It's a balancing act, but, you know, that's why if you go so far as to give a judge a dispensing power, the judge can make all the investigations to actually say, was it someone's actual wishes or was there something untoward going on? So I think putting faith in judges to actually, rather than having the black and white question, is it a valid will on these formalities, to actually take them away from that, to actually to have the power to look into the circumstances and see what the deceased person actually wanted, I think would be much more in keeping with a modern society.
Oh yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think the safeguarding, you know, is key. And it's something I spoke to somebody else on the podcast. I can't think of Helleth, I think, who I was talking about when, you know, when you first qualify and you're meeting kind of like the older generation, and you're you know, you're very green, aren't you? And you don't get taught how to assess somebody's capacity so much. It might have changed now, you know, on the existing courses. And I think that there's something more around those kind of softer skills that the industry, you know, needs to work on with the younger generation. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I think you're incredibly right on that, because we come out of law school and we are very good lawyers and we know the law, but what we're not really very good at is actually being human and being personal to clients and actually applying that law in some really practical senses. So as a young lawyer, to actually say to someone, sorry, I need to take mum's instructions alone, you as the son, maybe the main carer, needs to go outside the room, and having, you know, a young lawyer having to say that to the client takes some real sort of backbone, and actually having the ability to say to clients, actually, sorry, I don't think you have the capacity to make this will. I think we need to get a further assessment medically, because I'm unsure of your ability to understand everything that's going on. That requires a strong personality. And you said, you know, it's these soft skills which are lacking, and the soft skills are the hardest to learn on the basis of you know, it's only through doing it and seeing others doing it and having perhaps a mentor, someone who can help at the early start of your part of your career, help you learn these things that will allow people to sort of grow so that they can give proper advice rather than just a client turning up saying, I want this, and you know, the solicitor or the will writer just writing down what they want. Whereas actually you have to have the ability to stand up and say, well, in your circumstances, my advice is not to do that. Here are some other options for you to choose. And certainly I've lost clients over time where, you know, having had to stand up to them and say, you know, I don't think you've got capacity. You know, they've got particularly offended by that and they've sort of walked off to a firm down the road, as it were. And they'll always find someone who is willing to, you know, take the money and produce the documents. Whereas you may have some genuine concerns about, you know, either capacity or undue influence, which if you've got the higher standards may mean that, you know, you may not always get the work, whereas others with lower standards may be sort of willing to turn that blind eye. So it's always very difficult.
Oh, it's, but, it happened to me many moons ago when I was in private practice. Same thing, I lost a client because I, you know, was unsure about her capacity. I was going to ask this, and actually it's probably, you know, opportune time to talk about it. Regulation of wills?
Well, the thing about it is it has to come back. And the one thing I've been interested in reading all the reports that are coming out from, you know, the likes of Stephen Mason, being a solicitor just doesn't, you know, having that badge doesn't make you good at writing wills. There is an element of saying actually it's the qualifications, it's the experience that will actually allow you to sort of judge each situation on a case by case basis. And I'm always learning and I'm always sort of, you know, finding new situations and unusual situations in families. And, you know, it does occasionally, you know, need you to stop and think about situations. So it's not about having any particular badge that you say, well, I've got that badge and therefore I should be able to do this without question. Because whereas some solicitors may write, you know, hundreds of wills in a year, there are other solicitors that write one or two because they also do family law, they do employment law, and they happen to dabble in wills. And I've seen some, over my time, some particularly atrocious wills that have been written by dabbling solicitors because they've just said, one particular that comes to mind where an employment solicitor just so happened to say, well, I can do your will as well as part of all of this. And, you know, just went in, found a really old precedent on the firm's share drive and just filled in the blanks highly inappropriately and completely wrong. And it was just by chance it was discovered. And that sort of thing shouldn't happen. And it's where, you know, it's not about just because you're a solicitor, you should be able to write wills. It's about things like STEP membership or SFE membership or having, you know, those extra sort of qualifications to show that, you know, you know what you're doing. I've met some really good will writers who aren't solicitors, who aren't legal executives, who have been doing it for 10, 15, 20 years, who write absolutely fantastic wills, who give really good advice, but they don't have that formal qualification, that badge. And I would rather have someone like that write my will than an only qualified solicitor who's been doing it for 6 weeks and has never written a will before. But the public perception of saying will writer over, you know, solicitor may be different in that situation. So I think it's incredibly nuanced, and I look forward to seeing how sort of the Mason report comes along with this and actually saying ultimately it's about the quality of the service that is offered to the clients and making sure that they all get the best service. And it shouldn't matter whether you're a solicitor or a will writer or a legal executive, so long as you hit that standard.
I couldn't agree more. As my mum always says, there's good and bad everywhere. And I always say it, there's good and bad solicitors and there's good and bad will writers. And there are some really excellent will writers, and it is based on experience. And I think the only way that can change actually is the regulators approaching things in a qualitative way and looking at the quality measures of the person providing a service, and whether that's by, you know, an online comparison site. I don't know what the answers are, but I think there's got to be something in measuring somebody's experience and the qualifications.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing is, at the moment, there's very little to compare service with service. So people naturally look at price, and competition markets authorities reports will look at price. But the interesting thing will be is, as technology develops, there's going to be some more feedback. So if we look at the land registry publishes statistics on, you know, how many applications they've received from, and they can break it down by numbers from each firm. They can break down the number of times a firm has got their applications through first time, the number of times they've had to have requisitions, what type of requisitions. So they're starting to, you know, see which of the conveyances, you know, do the most applications for transferring properties, which ones have the most issues with their applications. And it'd be interesting to see if the probate registry go the same with digitization. So they'll be able to say, here's a league table of the top 10 applications by firm. So you'll be able to see that which firms do the most, but they'll also be able to put out statistics saying which firms actually have the most issues with their applications. And then people have a qualitative view. So yeah, if you've got a law firm that's, you know, able to say, you know, our typical applications, you know, we do 100 a year, you know, clients will find that much more interesting to look at compared to a firm that does 3 a year. And, you know, then they're able to sort of make better judgments, as it were. So it's not all about the price. And that will become the same with, you know, with not just probate, but it could be sort of many different things like LPAs. You know, how many LPAs available, you know, do they make each year? And the one thing about wills is because there is no will registration, you know, we'll never get to see that. But, you know, you can sort of see how many times their wills went through probate without issues, or how many times their wills were stopped and had, you know, requisitions that need to be sorted out.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's interesting, and I don't think people should be scared of it either. I think it should be embraced, and it's all for the good of our clients, isn't it? So
absolutely. I mean, if you do nothing wrong, then there's nothing of an issue to worry about having clients have access to that data.
No, not at all. So, interesting times ahead. No regrets for going to private client then.
Absolutely not. Do you know what? Every day is different. Every client is different. And that's absolutely fantastic, because you get a new will instruction, you go in and you meet these people, you understand about their family, their circumstances, how they got to where they are. And do you know what? It's such a social area of law to be in, because, you know, you get to sort of really help and make a difference to people to achieve what they want to do, especially in will making. You know, it's nice to actually say at the end of the day, I haven't just produced a legal document or a piece of paper with a wet signature on it, but what I've actually done is I've given someone peace of mind that their wishes are going to be taken care of when they've died. And that's, you know, really fulfilling part of the job. And I think you only get that in private client work.
No.
They're unbiased.
That's great to hear. Well, Ian, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thanks.